Okay, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Kadampa Center. Just so I can get an idea who's here, do we have anyone who's here for the first time this morning? A couple people. Okay, great. And were some of y'all here last week when Venerable Chickie introduced the 16 guidelines? Great. My name's Robbie Watkins. I'm one of the members of the center. And during Geshe Gelick's absence, he's our resident teacher. Various members of the center will be leading the discussions on Sunday morning, and the chosen topic is the 16 guidelines, which I'll talk about in just a minute. But we'll begin with our prayers. I have the Golden Prayer Book. It's new, so we'll be jumping around a little bit. We'll start with the Seven Limb Prayer and the Short Mandala Offering in English on page 35. And then we'll do the, Four Immeasurables in Tibetan on the bottom of page 37. And then chant Chinrezig's Mantra seven times and Green Tara's Mantra seven times. So begin with the Seven Limb Prayer on page 35. Reverently I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I declare all my negative actions accumulate since beginningless time and rejoice in the merit of all holy and ordinary beings. Please remain until the end of cyclic existence and turn the wheel of Dharma for living beings. I dedicate my own merits and those of all others to the great enlightenment. Now we'll do the short mandala offering in English. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and moon, I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Niryatayami. And on page 37, we'll chant the Four Immeasurables in Tibetan. Okay. Sen Chen Tam Che De Wong Dong De Wei Gyur Dam Don Po Gyur Shik Du Ge. Oops, I don't do gel don do gel gi gyur don drel war gyur shi do gel me pe de wa don me drel wa Gyur Shik Ne Ring Chav Dam Ni Dam Drel Wei Nyan Dom La Ne Par Gyur Shik. And then we'll do Chinrezig's Mantra seven times. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. And then Green Tara's Mantra seven times. Om Dare Tu Dare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Wah. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Wah. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Wah. And now we can do a little bit of meditation just to help settle our minds. So begin by checking your posture. The most important part of the posture is to have your back a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Your eyes can either be lightly closed or just slightly open. Mouth is closed, lips lightly touching. Shoulders are down and a little bit to the back. Chest is open. Upper arms are away from the sides of our body. We can either put our hands on our knees or right hand on left with thumbs touching. And our legs are in a position that we find stable and non-distracting. So the point of the posture is not to torture yourself, but to find a position that you can establish and then you don't have to pay attention to it. If you're sitting in a chair, it's fine to put a cushion underneath your feet. And we'll begin by just taking three deep breaths from the abdomen with the stomach expanding on the in-breath so that our diaphragm and lungs are pulled down and then the stomach contracts towards the spine on the exhalation. And now you can just allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. And it's always good to begin a meditation session by setting your motivation, your reason for doing the meditation. If you're just here out of curiosity and want to give it a try, that's a great motivation. If you're meditating and sitting quietly with your mind so that you're a little bit calmer, a little bit more relaxed, that's wonderful. But it's said that the best motivation, the most powerful one, is what we refer to as the bodhicitta motivation. The wish to become enlightened so that I can be of benefit to all sentient beings. That even doing something as sitting quietly for the next few minutes is done with the wish, the intention, the motivation that I'm improving my mind so that I can be of greater benefit to others. So see if you can, even if it seems unnatural or forced, see if you can generate that motivation for the next minute. And having set our motivation, we can now begin the actual meditation. And we're going to do a simple type of concentration meditation in which our awareness is simply placed on the breath, the movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. The physical sensation of the breath moving in and out. We just pay attention to that. Every time we notice, as will inevitably happen, that our mind has wandered to another subject, to a memory or a physical sensation or something we need to do when we leave the center this morning, we just gently set that aside and come back to the breath. Over and over and over again, placing the mind on the breath. So we'll just think like that for the next couple minutes. And we can bring our meditation to a close by doing a simple dedication. We can acknowledge ourselves that we've done something positive by sitting quietly and training our mind. And we think, may that positive imprint not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that is beneficial to all sentient beings. Okay, this session is going to be a discussion, and if nobody has anything to say, we'll get out of here early. But I hope everyone will feel comfortable participating. I'm here just to lead the discussion, not in the formal role of a teacher. As I mentioned, the subject that we're studying or discussing over the several weeks until Geshe-la returns is what's referred to as the 16 guidelines. If you spend any time around Tibetan Buddhism, you'll realize very quickly that there are lots of lists of the three this and the four that's and the 81,000 these. This list only has 16, so it's a fairly simple one. The 16 guidelines are a set of guidelines that were developed in Tibet during the 7th century when King Sonam Gampo invited some Buddhist scholars from India to visit in Tibet, and with the idea of people could be happier somehow, that there could be certain guidelines that would allow people to be happier. So the full title for this is the 16 Guidelines for a Happy Life. Does anybody have the 16 guidelines memorized? 16 guidelines for a happy life. Anyway, those guidelines, it's not really considered a core teaching in Tibetan Buddhism, but there's a group affiliated with the FPMT, the worldwide organization that we're part of, that has developed a curriculum for students, young people, old people, using the guidelines, and it's very non-religious. I think you can read the book. I don't know if you'll even see the word Buddhism anywhere in this book. Some people would accuse it of being Buddhism light, which I don't think is quite accurate, but it is a very non-dogmatic approach to some of the fundamental principles of Buddhism and other world religions. So anyway, the 16 guidelines are broken down into four categories. Anybody know what those are? Okay, yeah, that's number three. I'll put that down here. How we relate to others. Yes, good, thank you. Others. First one is how we think. Next is how we act. How what? Yeah, thank you. Very good. How we find meaning. Yes, they all start how we find meaning. So the four categories of the 16 guidelines, how we think, how we act, how we relate to others, how we find meaning. Okay? And does anybody know what comes under how we think? Yes, very good. On the 16 guidelines.
Yeah, on the 16 guidelines, is it 16guidelines.org?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you go to humility, it has some links, and one of them is a really cool video that's sort of puts us in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it starts with a woman and a man in a park, and it zooms out, you know, to like way past Earth, past the solar system, all the way out. Then it comes back in, and mm-hmm. it goes all the way down to their cells.
Okay.
And
great.
So it's really cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, after humility, what comes up? Yeah, contentment's in there. There's patience before that. Then contentment.
Delight.
Yeah, mm-hmm, delight. And delight. Okay, under how we act.
Is it the order within the category?
Is there a sense of the order? Not that I'm aware of, okay? Okay, how we act.
Kindness.
Honesty, generosity. Have people know them better than I do. Okay, right speech. Okay. Kindness, honesty, generosity, and right speech. And how we relate to others. Respect. Forgiveness. Gratitude, and loyalty, and then how to find, what did y'all talk about last week, anybody remember? Aspiration, yeah, Venerable Chukyi talked about aspiration. Then there's principles, service, and courage. Okay.
No.
So, 16 principles. How we think, humility, patience, contentment, delight. How we act, kindness, honesty, generosity, right speech. How we relate to others, respect, forgiveness, gratitude, loyalty. And how we find meaning, aspiration, principles, service, and courage. So, the implication is, if we live by these guidelines, the result is a happy life. Whose life is going to be happy? If I live by all of these, do I make other people happy? Maybe, okay. No guarantee, okay. But according to Buddhism, now we bring a little of the Buddhism behind this, if I live according to these guidelines, I will inevitably make myself happy. When I look at this, I think we're really talking about what in more standard Buddhism is referred to karma. What does the word karma mean?
Action.
Action. Thank you, Chris. Karma refers to any action that we do, any action of body, speech, or mind. Anything we do physically, anything we say, anything we think, makes an imprint on our mind stream, on our consciousness, that we will inevitably experience in the future. And actions done according to these principles will inevitably lead to me experiencing my happiness in the future. According to the Buddha, that was a law of nature. Actions motivated by these principles, these guidelines, will inevitably result in my happiness in the future. Okay? And they're probably going to make other people happier to be around me. Okay? This is all about, in one sense, just how to be a nice person, the kind of person that other people would want to be around, be comfortable around. But according to the Buddhist teachings, you know, I cannot make someone else happy. Your happiness or unhappiness is your own business. It's the result of your karma. Okay? So, 16 guidelines for my happy life. And that is not at all self-interested or selfish, okay? As His Holiness the Dalai Lama always says, the wish to be happy is common to all of us as human beings. And it's a valid wish. And if we're happier, we can benefit others more. And hopefully they will become happier. Any comments or thoughts? Okay. You got a puzzle look.
Okay, so I'm just a little confused because, I mean, I understand about how these would give a person, you know, if they practice them, they would give a person a happier life. But I think I've been reading from His Holiness some stuff about how one of the things you're supposed to be doing is also reaching out to other people and making them happy. And I don't know if I'm understanding this correctly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little bit confused. You know, if I focus on myself, you know, my own happiness, would you just elaborate a little bit on
that?
Well,
I mean, what we do is develop these qualities so they do make ourselves happy, but they are also so that we can at least benefit others, okay, even if we can't make others happy. You know, if the Buddha were an all-powerful God, he would have made everybody happy. And I can vouch that there is at least one person who's not happy all the time. I can't address exactly what His Holiness was saying, but ultimately, your happiness is your own responsibility. Or my happiness is my own responsibility. It can't come from someone else. Okay, so it's foot sides of the same coin. If you make yourself happy, you're going to be a better person to be around. Okay, so is there a question, comment over here? I mean, that's a completely another subject. I'm not going to go there. Okay, there are various forms of the seven limb. There are seven additional limbs or branches to it. Okay. Okay. So Venerable Chuki last week talked about aspiration. So that one's done. We're not going to get to all 16 in Geshe-la's absence. And can anybody guess which one I picked? Forgiveness. To talk about this morning, because for one thing, I'm somewhat confused by what that word means, the whole idea of forgiveness. I said, I need to study this a little bit. It's a word that's used in a lot of different traditions, and it's something that we don't hear our Buddhist teachers talk about much, if at all.
Is that because of karma?
because we don't have the karma for them to talk about forgiveness?
No, the Buddhist, well, the party line, if I can say that. that happens to you is because of what you did before, so why would you want to, there would be no need to forgive people.
Well, you know, that's one point of view. I don't know if people are familiar with Alex Berzin. He's one of the most distinguished Tibetan scholars, or Western scholars of Tibetan Buddhism. And he has if you ever want to look something up, the Berzin Archives, Berzin, is online and free, and you can look up just about anything you want to in Tibetan Buddhism. And he sometimes it takes a little bit of an iconoclastic or contrarian point of view on certain topics. And he says, as far as he knows, there's no word for forgiveness in Tibetan, and it's a concept that's basically not compatible with Buddhist teachings. Now, I disagree, but there is that point of view out there. Certainly, we talk about Buddha forgiveness in other religious traditions. Who wants to give me, who defined forgiveness? I think that's part of the problem in talking about the subject. Anybody, what does it mean to forgive someone? Anybody want to take a stab at it? Does it mean forgetting what someone did? Letting go of the hurt. Okay, that's good. I like that. Anyone else want to contribute? I'll give you the... let's see, the Webster's third edition definition, where is it? To cease to feel resentment on account of a wrong committed. To cease to feel resentment. So that certainly means letting go. I mean, that almost sounds like Buddhism, when you talk about ceasing to feel certain things, to feel resentment. To cease to feel resentment against on account of a wrong committed. Okay?
But that has a lot of self. It's toward yourself. It's not towards the other person.
I think that's the key point. Does this? This is something that we're doing in our own mind. It's not. Is it having any immediate effect on the person who's wronged us? If we forgive them, what does it mean when you say "I forgive you"? I mean, it means we've let go of that feeling of being hurt, of being victimized, of being wrong. Why do we let go of it? Because we realize it hurts us more, okay? It's not doing us any good. It's making us unhappy. So it may not have any effect on that person who wronged us, okay? And it's not a process of saying, I'm forgetting it, I'm wiping it out of my mind, I'm pardoning you, I'm making you into a better person. It's a very inner action, saying to yourself or to the other person, I'm letting go of this feeling because it's making me unhappy. It is not benefiting me to hold on to this. Back of the room. Yeah, if you wait for the mic.
It's also not taking...
Yeah. It's also not taking the actions of others personally. So when someone acts, it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not taking it personally.
Okay, saying it's not taking it personally. Explain on that a little. I like that, but elaborate on that a little bit more. What does that mean?
A lot of times when we're hurt, we think it's because people are doing something to us,
mm-hmm.
and people are more often doing what they think they should do or what they need to do, and we take it personally, like they are directing it at us, but really it's whatever's going on with them,
mm-hmm.
and being able to see it as, they're treating me this way because of something that's going on with them, not necessarily.
Excellent point.
Not that we have no responsibility, that we might be part of it, but that there's something going on with them, and it may have nothing to do with us. They're just, it's their filter and the way they're reacting.
That's an excellent point. Yeah, and I hope I have time to elaborate on that a little bit. Any other comments? Okay. Here's another definition of forgiveness from the Omniscient Wikipedia. Forgiveness is the intentional and voluntary process by which a victim, nasty word there, undergoes a change in feelings and attitude regarding an offense, lets go of negative emotions such as vengefulness with an increased ability to wish the offender well. Okay? And it's not the same as condoning or excusing or pardoning or forgetting. Okay? So, lots of times in Buddhism, when we talk about states of mind, we'll say that they're opposites, or they're kind of opposing states of mind. So if we have forgiveness on one side, what would be the opposite of that? Or the opposing mind?
Resentment, grudge.
Resentment, okay. Holding a grudge. Vindication. I think anger. Okay, I think a lot of it is based on anger. That is one of the negative emotions that if we want to forgive, that we have to let go. Okay, anger is referred to as one of the three poisons, along with attachment and ignorance. But forgiveness is kind of the antidote to anger or the opposing mind. There's this. Couple little stories. There's one about holding on to anger is like reaching into a hot fire and grabbing a coal to throw at your enemy. You know, it may not hurt them, but it's definitely going to hurt you. So if we're holding on to that anger, it's like keeping a hot coal in our mind. And one more story. And then there's the story of two Tibetan monks who got out of prison. They'd been imprisoned in Tibet for a number of years, and they'd been tortured, and all these horrible things happened to them. And
one of the monks asked the other one, do you forgive these people who did this to him? And the monk said, no way, I am still so angry at what they have done to us. And then the first monk said, well, they still have you in prison then. Okay, it's because his mind was still in that place. Chris, you were going to say...
Venerable Rabina always mentions it's like drinking the poison and expecting them to die.
Yeah, it's like if we're anger is like drinking poison and expecting our enemy to die. That's very good. I like that, yeah. So all we have to do, forgiveness is letting go of this anger, this resentment, this grudge. Piece of cake, right? Why can't we do it? What's so hard about it? Sometimes we actually like being angry, don't we? So there's something about anger that feels good at some level. It feeds the ego. Yeah, exactly. And we like anything that feeds our ego feels comfortable and self-affirming, and we can come up with all these reasons why we're right and why the other person is wrong. But does that lead to happiness? Does that lead to contentment? Does that lead to peace of mind? It gives us a momentary thrill, but it doesn't get us where we want to go, I don't think. Okay. So how can we let go? How can we let go of these feelings? If we're going to go with forgiveness is letting go of the anger, letting go of the resentment, letting go of the grudge. And if anybody has any practical experience with this, I'd be glad to. How do we do that? It's easy to say, do it. But how do we actually do it? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness is the capacity to reclaim our peace of mind when something has happened to disturb us. That's from the 16 Guidelines book.
Okay. I think if you can kind of reflect on it and see, like the things you just pointed out, if you reflect on that it's not going to help you at all and it's not even going to hurt them,
mm-hmm.
and you realize, I want to feel better and move on.
Yeah. So. Okay, that's a very Tibetan Buddhist way of approaching a negative mind state where we know something is bothering us. We think analytically using our own experience about the disadvantages of thinking that way and just being a little bit more realistic. You know, this really is not helping me. Okay, this is really making me unhappy. This, you know, resentment about my relationship with one of my parents or a friend or ex-spouse, you know, it's just a bad habit and it is not helping me. It's disturbing my mind. It prevents me from seeing the situation accurately. Yeah, so reflect on the disadvantages. How else can we let go of these grudges we carry around? In the back. Or I could just repeat everything you say into the mic here. But we do have people around the world who are listening to what's going on at Kadampa
really?
Center this
no
morning.
Pressure. compassion, trying to understand why the motivations for that person acting in that way that hurt you.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe that most people get up in the morning to say, I'm going to be a jerk today. Trying to understand why someone possibly...
Yes, exactly. Okay, great. Great point. Anybody else have any tricks for letting go of the resentment?
Reflecting on impermanence.
Let's hear an elaboration on that. Yeah, if you could bring the mic up, Chris. Reflecting on impermanence, okay? First, tell us what impermanence means. Some people may not be...
Not permanent.
Yeah, which in Buddhism specifically means things are changing. Something that's impermanent, it doesn't mean it disappears necessarily, but means it's changing continuously. And basically everything we come in contact with is impermanent, and that everything is changing.
And so like you mentioned with your parents, things like that, I mean, if you think about impermanence and things are always changing and they're going to be gone someday, then it kind of wakes you up a little bit and realize that, you know, regardless of the details, you know, things are going to, they're going to be gone someday. So you're going to hold a grudge until, you know, they're gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. Yeah. Any other suggestions? Do we have one back here?
I think it's about having habits around it too, because when particularly I find if it's somebody that I don't interact with a lot, or even somebody that I do, but the habit of what's happened and my thinking is so ingrained that I can maybe focus on forgiveness, and then, you know, the following week maybe it all bubbles back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important to be intentional about it and know that it's not a one-time deal,
mm-hmm.
that you have to work on it.
Yeah, you have to practice
regularly.
That way of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to be a two steps forward, one step back kind of process. Okay. I'm going to give, this is a four-step method for to practice forgiveness that I got from a, I think it's from a Zen Buddhist text, but it, and I'm not saying I agree with all of it, but it touches on ideas that we've already mentioned here. First thing is acknowledge that there's probably a part of you that doesn't want to forgive. There's a part of you that is clinging on to the grudge or the resentment because it feeds the ego. It feeds our sense of who I am, of I'm right. I mean, it wouldn't be there. We wouldn't have this grudge if we weren't holding on to it for some reason or in some way. So first thing is just acknowledge that. And with the corollary that the forgiveness is not going to be something that necessarily happens quickly if it's with a very major issue. Okay, and the second point is, and this is somewhat in line with what you said, acknowledge that when somebody hurts another person, that they are suffering also. Nobody strikes out and hurts others out of love and compassion or out of being a happy person. It means that at some level, they are suffering. Okay? And they may not even understand that their harmful behavior is the cause of their own suffering. They may think, as I said earlier, you know, we all want to be happy. They may be under some delusion that that's the way to get happy, and it's only making them suffer more. You know, we all have known people or probably been in that situation ourselves. You know, why is this always happening to me? You know, just this lack of understanding how our own behavior contributes to our own suffering. So realize that the other person is suffering also. Okay? And then the third point, again, we touched on this, is find the common ground between you and the other person. Okay? In what ways are they like me? Am I like them? Have I behaved that way in similar situations? Am I unhappy at times when I strike out? Yes. Okay? I can behave, or I have behaved in exactly the same way as this other person. Okay, so this is really pure Buddhism. See that the other person is suffering. See that they're similar to yourself. They're not really that different. And then at some point, the last step I would refer to as resolution. It just means with the understanding of giving up this feeling of wanting to hurt the other person, but realizing that they are similar to myself, make a decision about, I am not going to be ruled by this any longer. I have the freedom to think in other ways. I have the freedom to do with this experience what I want to do. I do not have to respond in this way. So there's a little bit of intentionality in there saying, I can let go of this. I am going to move forward. And it may not happen like that. It may be a gradual process. As this writer quotes, freedom is what we do with what's been done to us. Okay, we don't have any control about what the other person has done, but we do have the freedom to move forward. It's not the circumstances of our lives that matter. It is what we choose to do with those circumstances. Okay, and with an understanding that this quality of forgiveness, this letting go, will lead to gives us an opportunity to move forward, to create some happiness for ourselves. And a forgiving person, which doesn't mean you're a doormat, doesn't mean you ignore it when someone hurts you, doesn't mean you don't confront someone when you think their behavior is particularly unskillful, but you can forgive, which means not holding on to the grudge. Okay, comments?
So you told the story about the two monks that had been in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do in a situation where the person continues to hurt you, like when you're in prison?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you set up for forgiveness under a situation like that?
Well, you know, what we've heard from a lot of these monks is that they realized instinctively that the people who were torturing them were creating the causes to experience even greater suffering in the future than they were inflicting on the monks. And they were actually able to develop some compassion, it said, for the people who are torturing them, which is not something, is the result of years of practice. It's not just a great idea that came to them, you know, while they were having bamboo shoots put under their toenails and things. But they were, it said that some of them, the ones who had practiced seriously, could actually sit there and have compassion for the people who are torturing them. And I think if your mind is filled with compassion, there's not much room for holding a grudge. Did you want to say something, Chris?
Yeah. When one of these really terrible schoolroom shootings happens,
mm-hmm.
well, I can't remember which one. That's bad.
Yeah,
to say right there. But I did notice that I was, rather than being angry at the guy who did it,
mm-hmm.
I was compassionate because I'm not bragging or anything, but it really did feel good just to be compassionate to him and look what he's created for himself in the future.
Yeah. And that's probably not something you would have thought of 20 years ago.
Right.
I wouldn't have.
Right.
I think a lot of people, a lot of Buddhists thought the same thing, yeah.
And this is kind of a much less extreme thing, but this seems more common in modern life, is that one benefit, I think, is like when I deal with customer service,
mm-hmm.
It can be very frustrating, and I used to get really angry and, you know, to the point that I couldn't even function. And now, even if it's kind of, you know, poor service or whatever, I just don't get angry. I don't, and like, this is a person doing their job. They have their set of rules. There's no reason to be angry at them. And it actually allows me to, you know, kind of to the question about what if they keep doing things. It's not going to change who they are, what they're set up, or how they work, but it allows me to kind of step back and actually have a clear mind about how do I get what I want and how do I do this quickly and skillfully without getting riled up over nothing.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. And sometimes our resentment or our grudges are against, you know, Hitler or mass shooters, about things that have not necessarily affected us personally, but we get very angry and hold on to it. Politicians from the other side, things like that. Those are hard things to work with sometimes. Okay. So if we don't have any more comments, let's do another meditation. Okay. Anything anybody wants to say before we do our last meditation? Okay. Check your posture. Three deep breaths from the abdomen. Just a couple minutes. First, set your motivation for the meditation to follow. And having set your motivation, now just a couple minutes of concentration on the breath to get the mind a little clearer and more focused. Just putting the mind on the breath and bringing it back to the breath every time it wanders. And now that our mind is a little more focused, we'll begin our forgiveness meditation. And we're going to use the mind's ability to visualize, which really just means to imagine. So what we're going to imagine is that standing in front of us is someone whom we hold a grudge against, someone who has hurt us, has said something wrong to us, has behaved unskillfully. And don't necessarily pick the most charged example for this short meditation, but someone who you just have a little bit of a issue with. And you want to make the meditation as real as possible. So imagining that they're alive, lifelike, standing in front of you dressed as they typically are, three-dimensional. So first, just acknowledge your own feelings, that there's a part of me that kind of likes being irritated or resentful with this person, that I feel justified in feeling that way, that the other person is very wrong. It gives me a good sense of who I am to feel this way. There's a part of me that holds on to those feelings, even though they disturb my mind. If I look at them closely, these are not happy feelings. These feelings are not benefiting me. And now, think that this person who has hurt me is suffering also. That in the same way that my mind is unhappy at times, that I feel pain, that this person also is unhappy. That they did not hurt me out of a joyful mind, that they are suffering in the same way that I am. They may not even understand or realize how their suffering is caused by their own behavior. And now acknowledge how much this person is like yourself. I want to be happy. They want to be happy. Sometimes I do things that hurt others, just as this person sometimes hurts others. I'm acting under the burden of a tremendous load of karma from the past. They are acting under the load of their karma. I make bad decisions motivated by a sense of self, in the same way they have unskillful actions because of clinging to the self. There are really many more ways that I am like them than I am different. And then in the meditation, with a resolution that I'm going to let go of this. I'm going to move on. It was a difficult situation. I'm not forgetting it, but I'm not clinging to the negative emotions in my mind. And it may take a long time to begin thinking that way, but it can be done according to the Buddha. And you can end the meditation now. Okay. And we'll do our final prayers on page 244 and 245 and 246. Okay, we'll do the short life prayers. Green Tara's mantra, and then the prayers on page 245, and then the Shantideva dedication. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as a bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Majjhana's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplish magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. Let's read the Lama Tsongkhapa prayer and prayers on 245, then we'll come back to the mantra. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of non-objectifying compassion, Manjushri, master of stainless wisdom, Vajrapani, destroyer of the entire host of Mars, Tsongkhapa, crown jewels of the sages of the lands of snows, to Lozan Drapa, at your feet I make request. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the names of Avatari, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama, ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. And now Green Tara's mantra seven times. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 And then the Shantideva dedication. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and evil quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, thank you everyone. Have a nice day.